It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 21st day of September 2022. I hope, for those of you listening live, I hope you have enjoyed the last full day of summer 2022. We head now into the grim darkness of the slow death that is autumn and the dead cold of winter in the northern hemisphere. Of course, it's the exact opposite for our Antipodean friends. Oh my, I'm very sunshiny today, aren't I? No, it's fine. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you you'd like to augment your listening experience on the live end of the program, run on over to headon.live. Click on chat room, and if you've never done so before, pick yourself out a screen name, a password, and then you can be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific. All time zones in between and the great globe round. Mm-hmm. And if you do pop by right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve. Steve! Yes. And a merry time will be had by all. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, as a consequence of that, we thank our 21st day of the month PayPal subscribers, and that means we say thank you. This being Prayer Meeting Wednesday, we say thank you to Sister Karen and to Brother Harold of Sochtris, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you so much. And thanks as well to Sister Tracy, and thanks to all of you who are partial sponsors of the program, and with your kind gifts make the continuation of this ongoing effort possible. Mm-hmm. And so the fundraising goal stands at $1,645. That would be to bring us even with today. So that's where it stands. No challenges on the table. And hopefully we will knock some of that down and keep me in bill-paying mode to keep us going here. I mentioned toward the close of the program yesterday that I had had correspondence from Paul from Parts Unknown. And I wanted to get things going with that because Paul has been such a help over the course of the pandemic, which, by the way, is not over. Paul from Parts Unknown writes, Dear Robin, it has been too long since I wrote or called in. I just can't seem to find the time. At work, I've been training recent hires, which takes up all afternoon, and I can't plan a break during the show to call in. As for writing in, it has been difficult to find the time since every weekend has been busier than planned. For example, this weekend, I specifically set aside some time to write this letter on Sunday afternoon. On the top priorities of the weekend was to... One of the top priorities was to get the updated COVID boosters for the entire family. In our area, appointments are too far out if we want the boosters this month, and walk-in clinics are the only way to get us them, for us to get them. We failed to get them Friday night after work, Saturday at two different places, and today after two places. Either they just ran out, or the shipment that was supposed to show up never did. What was supposed to be a quick outing at 11 a.m. and home by noon took hours. We got home unboosted after 2 p.m. By the time we finished lunch and tackled a couple of chores, I finally started writing this after 5 p.m. Sunday night. Normally, I would push this off until next weekend, but this would be the fourth weekend in a row I would be pushing it off. I know the Horn community keeps up with COVID news you can find on any cable news show, but just in case, here's a quick update. Current COVID numbers are down, and the CDC and World Health Organization have been putting out statements saying we are nearing the end of the pandemic. COVID is becoming endemic, and soon you'll just have to get an updated flu shot for COVID once or twice a year. Even at the lab, COVID testing is shutting down. The last test will be done the week of October 10th. Put all this together, and all signs point to it's over just in time for the midterm election. Now, as I edit this Monday night, we have President Biden on TV and today announcing COVID is over. While this seems to be the message that is being packaged for the general public, some of the scientists I talk to have a different opinion. They're all still collectively holding their breath until winter. If we get another spike over the colder months of a current or new variant, then the pandemic just goes on. If the world doesn't get a major spike, similar to Delta or Omicron variants between now and Easter, we're very likely in the clear. To understand why the scientists I talk to about this are writing, waiting, and or worried about winter, you need to understand the basis of their opinion. There is a hypothesis in virology sciences about how the combination of overpopulation and increased temperatures worldwide is a recipe for diseases to spread farther, faster, and mutate quicker on an exponential scale. While the vast majority of virology and public health experts agree that a hotter planet will increase the severity and frequency of global pandemics, most of the experts on the news believe that this increase will be linear. But the inescapable fact that these organisms live in a world of exponential, not linear, growth. If you give these bugs an inch, they take a square inch. Well, that's brilliant, Paul. Those of us who follow the exponential growth hypothesis of pandemics as we get hotter point to monkeypox and polio following right behind COVID as examples that give it more weight. Somehow I knew that monkeypox and polio were going to come into the discussion. I didn't know, but I did know. Suspected, I guess. Continuing. Anyway, I think we need to think in those exponential terms, and those in power are not. They've created metrics that monitor hospitalization rates, positive test rates, and deaths. Then they make rules that say once these one-dimensional metrics get bad enough, you have enough data to enforce a mask mandate until the numbers go down again. I might add that when I attended the meeting in Atlanta, we all masked. And it was good. It was done well, I should say. Anyway, Paul says, they might pat themselves on the back. They've kept the distance we've given these diseases by not having a unified stance. on disease prevention measures like masks and washing hands to a few yards, but they're square yards. I tell you all this so you know where I'm coming from, so you can better understand why I'm still on my guard even though President Biden says it's over. I feel that COVID has the potential to get back up yet another time, like those horror movie monsters from the 80s that seem dead and pop up alive at the end, allowing a sequel that no one wants. While none of the scientific community can be certain COVID will be gone for good or pop back up, we do agree that COVID seems to be wearing a scary hockey mask, a.k.a. it has the potential to. My advice from the exponential camp is to continue to stay vigilant until Easter. I plan to get the updated booster and masking indoors at public places until at least mid-January, after everyone has traveled for the holidays and enough time has passed to see if COVID or something else raises its head. By that time, if nothing comes, I will drop the mask and ramp up to living my life before COVID. If the numbers stay low, I will stop masking at work around sometime in November. I'll keep you posted. Until then, I will stay masked at work and out in public. Not just for COVID, but for monkeypox and polio if you live in the Northeast. COVID may be done and turned, and that's really important, because the masking also does afford some protection against other viruses. Note that the flu rates went down dramatically during COVID, not because, you know, if you ask, you know, Alex Jones, not because of some false flag, but because masks work. COVID may be done and turning endemic, but monkeypox could take its place. I would stay cautious, keep the masks on, keep social distancing, don't spend more than 15 to 20 minutes indoor with crowds or of 10 or more. If the monkeypox numbers are moderate to high in your area, mind surfaces you touch. All the data points to monkeypox living on surfaces for a while. So I would avoid directly touching public door handles and using public restrooms. Monkeypox or polio have been operating on what little precautions we're still taking, and may go gangbusters in the aftermath of our massive celebration we're about to have this holiday season. I hope this helps you all make a good decision this upcoming holiday season. Just keep watching the numbers, as will I. As soon as I see something that concerns me, I will let the Horn community know immediately by email to warn people to be more careful. Stay safe and healthy, Horn community. Signed, Paul, from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much. And it's all good advice. We would do well not to simply dismiss what we've been through. And you have to take into account, and God, it's so infuriating. You have to take into account people like, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's out there screaming already that polio is fake. I guess he wants herd immunity to that, too. Jesus. God. So just be alert, and thank you to Paul for all the great information over the course of this long, long nightmare process. Now, I and others wore masks in the meeting down in Atlanta, but I tell you what, nowhere else. They're getting to be as rare as hen's teeth. And I can't help but thinking that it's probably a mistake. Yeah, Randy Radar says Thursday, September 22nd is the first partial day of fall in the Northern Hemisphere. Right, so today was the last full day of summer. Yeah. Darlene in Connecticut noting, autumn sucks. Friday will be frigid in Connecticut. Not getting out of the 50s and will drop into the 40s. Heat's going on. The cold front's keeping Fiona away, so six of one, half dozen of the other. I understand. Ah, and the lovely, beautiful fall colors. Ugh. It would have been... It really is pretty down on the Gulf of Mexico this time of year. This is really one of the better times to go down, but that's not happening. Program notes. Do remember, I will be out of here in the... I'll be away for a few days in the first day or first week of October. I've long planned for it was supposed to be 40th, but it's 41st high school reunion, and I very badly want to be there. Miss Terry will be there, and some other dear friends of mine, and Terry and I will vie for most changed. Somebody said maybe furthest traveled, but you know, in a sort of an esoteric sense. But that will be the first week of October, so I will be gone from here from Wednesday through Sunday, and maybe I'll take the rig with me on that one. I may do that. Because it's not like I'm going to be in meetings all day like I was with this past trip. So that's Wednesday the 5th of October through Sunday the 9th. So that'll be 3 days of programming. And there may not be a Friday on the front porch this week. I'm waiting for information, but I may have to be out of town on Friday to do a favor for a dear, dear friend. So that's a possibility. That all having been said, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And we've got the annual Pew survey of religion is out. And so we will be probably delving into that. But, there are other things in the news today, like the fact that Letitia James, Tish James, what a woman, has filed a civil lawsuit against Nitwit Nero and his spawn, his gits. I had a note from Kim in New York earlier today saying, Tish James is the man, or woman. I'm so proud of her and my home state, not including Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA with no courage, for sticking it to the Orange Julius where the sun don't shine. Hear, hear. I'm in complete agreement. I mean, this is just, as we find ourselves so often saying these days, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Because Tish James, the Attorney General of New York, today filed a lawsuit against Nitwit Nero and against Traitor Tot and against Eric the Dumber and against Precious Princess I Wanka My Daddy Trump Kushner. In civil fraud, this could be truly costly. Among other things, in the lawsuit, one of the allegations is that his tacky-ass pile of bricks, Mayor de Lardass, was wildly overinflated in value. In a press conference, Tish James said he blatantly ignored legal restrictions at Mar-a-Lago, valued it on the false premise that it sat on unrestricted property and could be developed for residential use. In point of fact, she noted that when Nitwit Nero moved to Florida to live at Mayor de Lardass, MAGA Loco, that the city council of Palm Beach had to meet to re-vote having previously voted that he could only live there a certain part of the year. Letitia James added, Mr. Trump himself signed deeds sharply restricting changes to the property and donating his residential development rights in an effort to get a tax deduction and later to lower his property taxes on the property. The deeds also require Mr. Trump to donate over 23% of MAGA-LOCO's value to the Historic Trust for Historic Preservation if he ever sold it. Despite these restrictions, Mr. Trump valued it based on the fact that it was an 18-acre plot of land that could be sold and used as a private home. The valuations represent that these restrictions don't even exist. That's another way of saying, damn, he lied. And she went on to say that the revenue from MAGA-LOCO is less than $25 million. She said it should not have been valued at more than $75 million. But, oh my God, he valued it at $739 million. And then she stuck him in the soft and tender spot. She said that that property, MAGA-LOCO, is just one of many in which Nitwit Nero has tried to pad his wealth estimates, and that those estimates constitute, in her words, nothing more than smoke and mirrors. I wonder if there's screaming going on. Writing about the lawsuit, David Graham at The Atlantic noted that the allegations made by Tish James not only weren't unfounded, but are based, in fact, on many similar allegations that have been made about the former president. Quote, at the very least, the claims accord with lots of existing evidence uncovered by WNYC, ProPublica, and other news organizations. They match up with rumors that have swirled around Trump for years, and with the disdain with which many actual New York real estate titans treat the Trump organization. Yeah, everybody knew. But, you know, ho-hum, at least we'll get him out of our hair. We'll send him to Washington, D.C. Let them deal with him. Also, they fit in with what we know about Trump's dealings in other ventures like the fraudulent Trump University or selling meat through the mail or the Trump Foundation, the self-dealing so-called charity that James forced to shut down in a 2019 settlement. Oh, get 'em, Tish. Get 'em. Don't stop till they're selling pencils on the sidewalk. Grifting fraud merchants. David Graham writing says, though, in the end, Trump will have his chance to respond. He's likely to do so with blustering brazenness and flagrant misrepresentations. And given his past record, that just might work. I hate that part. But based on past experience, it's hard to say that pointing that out is somehow incorrect. And there will apparently be new January 6th committee hearings coming up. Representative Jamie Raskin announcing earlier today that they will meet again before the election and that there's a lot of new information to introduce to the public. He spoke outside the Capitol today and said that they're working on the final report. He didn't say anything about when it might be released. Also speaking was Committee Chairman Benny Thompson of Mississippi. He said that they're engaged in a work in progress And there's still a whole lot that needs doing before the report can be finalized. But that report, he noted, may come out before everything is fully known. He said, it's always a work in progress. Hope springs eternal. The hearing will be next week on the 28th. And he says that Benny Thompson said that there may be witnesses. The theme will be revealed in coming days. And one of the topics of interest is, of course, information garnered from Secret Service agents. Stay tuned. And Chairman Thompson also said that he is hopeful that the committee will yet hear from former Vice President Mike Pence-Solnit-Geek. Thompson noting, you have to clear that up. That became the main focus when the court failed and recounts failed, and then it fell to the pressure on the vice president to change the outcome of the electoral count. To his credit, he didn't do it. Right. Oh, and by the way, a note from Steve from Georgistan. Even if I'm not here, Steve wants y'all to know that there will be a front, there'll be a Skype front porch. Starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Good. Good. There's so much that, well, and, you know, we've got some. Well, how about a segment of This Day in Alex Jones? The lawsuit is ongoing in Connecticut. It began on the 13th. And again, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. The trial is actually in the second day of the trial itself. And, you know, it's based in defamation. And he had to, he just couldn't resist, and his lawyers must simply love it when he does this, and I mean that sarcastically. He threw a temper tantrum in front of microphones and cameras. That's the bottom line.
But the headlines were Jones doesn't show. They said, we don't want you. I show up yesterday. We don't want you. I show up today. We don't want you. And this guy's going to report I didn't show up today. That's lying. That's corporate fake media. And that's the shame on you. I'm here. Look. I'm here, ladies and gentlemen. This lie that I didn't show up to all those depositions, more than 8 depositions, the fact that we didn't open up everything because we had nothing to hide, and they didn't find us premeditatedly with some Lex Luthor plan to get rich off Sandy Hook. It was a small part of our coverage. That's another thing the judge ordered. I not say it's a small part. Their evidence is like 24, 23 minutes of me talking about this.
I think him scaled. And it turns out that, you know, the jury in Texas gave the plaintiffs, what, $45 million? Yeah, as it turns out, and he was saying things about, you know, we've only got a couple of, maybe 30, 40, 70 million dollars. No. It turns out he actually made more money after he was deplatformed than before. Like upwards of $1 billion. And that's why he's been so busy trying to squirrel away his money and hide it from the court. God, it would be nice to see him selling pencils, too. And a report in the Daily Beast indicates that problems continue to grow for Nitwit Nero. Yeah. He lied in court documents about security concerns the Secret Service had about the Attorney General's office in New York. A pair of sources and another person who knew what was going on in those discussions said that the Nitwit Nero legal team, counsel for a parking garage, they told a judge in confidential court documents that the Secret Service was concerned about safety in the Manhattan building where the Attorney General's office is located, and instead tried to get his contentious deposition moved to Trump Tower. One source saying, he'd be sitting behind the big desk where he has the authority. That's the only thing I can think of. It's his desk with chairs all around. It puts him in a very superior position. That from Barbara Ress, who used to be a construction executive with the Trump Dodge. He wanted to try to intimidate his interrogators and was willing to lie about the security inside the New York Attorney General's office. Meanwhile, Anthony Guglielmi, chief of communications for the Secret Service, said, the Secret Service is unaware of any security challenges at the office of the New York State Attorney General. But nonetheless, the pettifoggers went in and said, the Secret Service is terribly worried about security at the New York Attorney General's office. Every likelihood in the world that he directed them to do that. And it all went for nothing because on August 10th, Letitia James did in fact interview him. And that was when he pleaded the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination hundreds and hundreds of times. The Daily Beast reached out to Alina Habana, been a counsel for the parking garage, who used to be on the case. The Daily Beast gave her a chance to speak for herself, and she declined. And she said, I can't. Because it was ordered confidential by the court. And nonetheless, the people who came forward said, he put it all on the Secret Service. It was disgusting. Yeah, probably was. He is disgusting. No surprise there. Oh, and back to Alex Jones. Darlene in Connecticut notes, and the freak criticized the judge in the Waterbury court. Waterbury's 45 minutes drive from me. And we all know it's lie after lie after lie after lie. It'd be nice if there could be perjury charge here and there. Yeah, maybe, kinda, possibly. Oh, and this is just... this is just not apropos to anything. It's just a... remember the Tide Pod Challenge? Well, we've got a new one. Now trending on Twitter, and it just started out as smartassery, you know, shitposting, as the term goes. But trending on Twitter, and there's news articles everywhere. For instance, CBS said they posted an article saying, no, really, I'm not kidding. No, I'm not making this up. Don't cook your chicken in NyQuil. I swear, I've become the living... I'm a living facepalm emoji. And apparently the so-called social media NyQuil chicken challenge doesn't exist. But nonetheless, the FDA's official website... 6 days ago, posted a recipe for danger, social media challenges involving medicines, and said that the social media video challenge that encourages people to cook chicken in NyQuil is unsafe. It kind of begins with a post that says, if she makes you NyQuil chicken, do not let her go. Oh, my God. She. And, yeah, everybody, you probably have already guessed where this started. The home of, the seeming home of all things stupid, mean, and evil. 4chan. Because freedom! You can't shut 4chan down because... well, that would make zombie James Madison very sad, and constitutional originalism, y'all. But it's actually been around for a while, about 5 years. Back to 2017, photos of boiling chicken tenders in NyQuil. And then trying to put it in a burrito. And then putting it in a blender with red NyQuil and straining it through a French press. Yeah. So, this will now just, God, the age of social media is so freaking weird. Because it's not a thing, but now it will be. Because stupid people will do stupid things. And before this, the FDA, the last thing they posted about don't do this was the Benadryl challenge. Oh, we're doomed. The Benadryl challenge encouraged people to take massive doses of Benadryl in order to hallucinate. That one killed at least one person. And because it's 2022, as the article notes at BuzzFeed, there have been no reported deaths or illnesses from NyQuil chicken so far. But a lot more people know about it now. So, I mean, what happens when you... I'm no chemist. I don't... what happens when you subject... NyQuil to high heat? Oh, for pity's sakes. At midweek here, we should probably take note that the cue balls are off and running on a new cue ball prediction that's slated for Saturday. According to Vice, it begins with a German legislator named Friedrich Merz talking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And according to the Vice article, in his speech, Merz misspeaks and says that everyone will remember where they were on September 24th rather than February 24th, the day Russia invaded. Merz corrected himself in the official record of the Bundestag, but the cue balls in Germany think they've spotted something in which Merz accidentally let slip a detail from a secret plan. One member of a German Telegram channel pointed out that in episode 9 of season 24, 9-24, September 24, see how it works, of The Simpsons, that it's about a bunch of preppers. It came out in 2013. It's called Homer Goes to Prep School. And, I feel sorry. I do. I feel sorry for people at journalistic outfits like Vice, where they actually have to type words about this garbage. The Vice article says, in particular, the characters discuss WROL, or Without Rule of Law, which is doomsday prepper jargon for the complete breakdown of society after a major catastrophe. The episode also features an electromagnetic pulse device, which cue balls think will usher in 10 days of darkness and ultimately the return, of Nitwit Nero to the Oval Office. And according to the Vice article, Juan O. Savin, S-A-V-I-N, is the one who's been spreading the idea. He's, among others, he's organizing GOP Secretary of State candidates in a bunch of different states. The article goes on and says, everything from nuclear Armageddon to a financial reset to widespread water poisoning and an armed revolution has been predicted by those spinning these conspiracies to their followers. Last weekend, one of the speakers at the conspiracy-filled Reawaken America conference series, where Nitwit Nero's two adult sons, Trader Tot and Eric the Dumber, have spoken in the past, told the audience that the day of vengeance was a week away before adding, we're going to watch it happen. They've gone, the entire Trump cesspool, it's not a gene pool, it's a cesspool. They've fully embraced cue ballery at this point. And Nitwit Nero has been promoting shit over at Truth Social. Reading further into the Vice report, in the U.S. alone, there has been a noticeable uptick in violent activity linked to QAnon conspiracies in recent weeks. Last week, a man in Michigan shot and killed his wife and shot and injured his daughter after being radicalized by cue balls. In Pennsylvania, an armed man who had shared cue ball videos on Facebook went into a Dairy Queen and threatened to kill all Democrats. This is, of course, as we discussed yesterday evening, stochastic terrorism in action. And Nitwit Nero and his various minions and the marginal trailer queens and Clanny Oakleys are fellow travelers in the spread of these stochastic terrorist memes. In point of fact, marginal trailer queen even went so far as to post a video of what appears to be her kicking a young activist. No consequences. Oh, no, none of those. Can't have those. That's, no. Oh, and I mentioned marginal Clanny Oakley. Enter David Wheeler, who heads American Muckrakers Pack. And he just filed a complaint against the sheriff of Garfield County, Colorado, a dude by the name of Lou Valario. Lou Valario, as alleged, used his official Garfield County Sheriff's email account to send out talking points for a Clanny Oakley campaign event. WJCT, a broadcast outlet, said, in one email, the sheriff appears to have sent himself at his taxpayer-owned email a script for a campaign call supporting Lauren Boebert for Congress and calling her 2022 primary opponent, Don Corum, downright horrible for law enforcement, and accusing him, falsely of course, of voting to decriminalize fentanyl. Yeah. Valario kept, oddly enough, you don't see this every day, but he actually kept his mouth mostly shut. Here's a name you haven't heard in a while. Darlene in Connecticut says, I assume the 200-plus page complaint against the orange jumpsuit in waiting and his three stooges for Offspring that Letitia announced today doesn't include jail time because, one, there's a two-tiered justice system, so white-collar crime doesn't necessarily lead to hooscow, and two, any jail time, if it ever happens, will be up to the DA in New York City, confused and looking for a friend. Hi, friend. Actually, there's no jail time involved because it is a civil suit in fraud. It is not a criminal. It's a lawsuit, not a criminal charge. Darlene continues and says, I think she also said that Mara Lardass, that fugly bastion of disrepute and mafia-like criminal activities, worth about $75 million and cannot be converted to residential property all that easily, and yet the Orange Menace said it could be, or was residential and worth $750 million. That's quite a markup. Never pay retail. But yeah, that's exactly what she said at her press conference today. Oh, wow, that could, I'll listen to that after the program. Don in West Tennistan says, check out Alvin Crow and the Pleasant Valley Boys out of Austin, Texas, circa the 1970s, singing the NyQuil Blues. I don't know, maybe we do need to do a mashup between that song and, say, Little Feat doing Dixie Chicken. If you'll be my NyQuil Chicken. No singing! We're at 16:45 to go, and hope to, you know, if we could fund one day of the program from, like, a couple of weeks back, it would be freaking awesome. Lee says, QAnon and Germany misstatement. Wait, did you say the quote was from Fred Mertz from I Love Lucy? No, it was not from Fred Mertz. God, you people. Mertz, M-E-R-Z, Mertz. Fred Mertz. Well, you know. Siren. No, I said a minute ago, here's a name you haven't heard in a while. Dog the Bounty Hunter. He made a speech recently. His real name is Dwayne Chapman. Lord God, talk about plastic surgery gone wrong. Whew, mother. He went to the Opening the Heavens conference, because this is prayer meeting Wednesday. And I guess he was talking some religion stuff, but he got around with politics because, you know, the evangelicals always do. And, yeah, wow. Get the hockey puck.
Wait till November when the Republican Party, I think I met one Christian Democrat, have you? When the Republican Party wipes them out. Wait till November. Wait till November. I don't care how many ballot boxes there are. I don't care how they try to cheat. Wait till you see what happens. I told you this morning, little Hitler, and if you'll remember, Hitler committed suicide.
Little Hitler?
Hitler, you know why? Because he was caught. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to catch these cheaters. And I'm not saying with my mouth or my tongue that he's going to commit suicide, but you never know.
But he, in this case, would be President Joseph Robinette Biden. Little Hitler. You know, Nick Lowe, famous rockabilly star, the rockabilly revival of the, late 80s? Yeah, he's got a song called Little Hitler. And we won't play it. But, he was apparently full of himself. Dog the Bounty Hunter. And he found that little Hitler thing, and yeah.
So I pray, Lord, why have you led us in this way? Why did you let that freak steal the election? Why did you do this? And once I tell you why, you're going to agree with me. The Lord took me to the Bible, and Jesus' disciples came up to him and said, God, Jesus, why was this man born blind? Was it the sins of his father and his mother that made him blind? And Jesus said, no, that's not why this bad thing happened. The reason this bad thing happened is that to show God's manifestation. There's nothing we could have done about it. Not at all. Yeah, he stole it. Because now, little Hitler, we are going to show you God's manifestation.
You know, even though he was the Son of God and knew everything past, present, and future, when they asked him that, somehow or another, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, couldn't quite bring himself to say, well, listen, you know, there's something you don't understand. It's called genetics. This could be a genetic disorder. It could have been something, you know, birth trauma related. No, because he was talking to other illiterate people. Instead, he crafted an argument that really doesn't put... Yahweh, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, in the best light. Yeshua, if Dog the Bounty Hunter is to be believed, said that the most powerful being in the universe tormented a human being and made them blind, so that everybody would later see how awesome the most powerful being in the universe was. So he just kicks around the likes of us so that we'll know that he's freaking awesome if he makes the blindness go away. They really don't think about the stuff that little Hitler. And of course, I-O-K-I-Y-A-M, it's okay if you're a maggot. And the Secret Service won't visit him and say, you know, maybe you ought not be talking about issues of gun violence related to the sitting president of the United States, because that might encourage one of those soft skulls in your audience to go and try to do something about it, because it's what we call stochastic terrorism, Dwayne. Now, if a Democrat had done it, they'd get the visit. And by the way, going back to Alvin Crow and the Pleasant Valley Boys, Don in West Tennessee says, Alvin and the boys are an Austin institution still performing. If you're from South Austin, I know you've seen him. Sounds like it'd be a fine evening of music. As for the NyQuil chicken, Lee in New York says, the Darwin Awards will have to accelerate the trophy production. I fear you are not wrong. Let's check in on an outbreak of freedom in Georgia. Richmond County, Georgia. Hey, Steve, where's Richmond County? Josie High School in Augusta, Georgia, where, according to WRDW-TV, there was an outbreak of freedom and two shooting victims were taken off to the hospital outside the football stadium there. It was homecoming at Josie High School. The Richmond County School System said, as official T.W. Josie homecoming post-game tailgate activities were coming to an end, a shooting with injuries occurred. Richmond County School System Safety and Security, Richmond County Sheriff's Office are on the scene. Two people have been transported for medical treatment. Our thoughts are with those affected by the... They left out the prayers! Our thoughts are with those affected by the incident. The Richmond County Sheriff's Office is handling the investigation. Freedom! Wolverines! And staying in Georgia, because, oh my God, these little signposts on the way to the apocalypse. This comes out of Lawrence County, Georgia, where a group of young scholars spelled out that word letter by letter on their T-shirts and posted it on social media, responding to the backlash. School District Superintendent Clifford Garnto said, our Lawrence County Schools Administration fully aware of the derogatory photos circulating on social media outlets. And the question then becomes one of, you know, can you not teach an algorithm to... No? We do not support nor condone any offensive actions of this nature. The environment and teaching at West Lawrence High School fosters love and respect among all students for each other. What is observed in this picture is completely misaligned with the values of our school and community. Well, now, there's that passive voice that Steve in New York hates so much, and for good reason. What is observed in this picture? So it apparently it's the observing that's the problem and not the actual use of the word.
Rest assured, the incident is being investigated.
Why all the passive voice?
We have to be responsible for our actions, and every action has consequences.
And I love this. The station did not show the photo itself since it featured minors.
Wow.
If it hadn't featured minors, they would have proudly put that same word that has all the same letters as ginger on the website. Christ on a saltine cracker. And see, Mr. Superintendent, once again, it apparently does reflect the values of your school system because members of it are doing it. These aren't some outside agitators that came in. No, these are some rotten little white boys, maybe, who decided it would be funny to spell out a filthy, racist, vulgar, derogatory slur. But, you know, oh well.
It's being investigated.
And no one will, and here's the fun part of them investigations. Nobody's ever going to find out if anything was done about it. Oh, and by the way, back to Dog the Bounty Hunter. Matt in San Francisco says, if you're getting your spiritual guidance from a guy named Dog, you should probably pause and check yourself. How desperate for entertainment are these hundreds, if not thousands, of people who packed that gospel emporium to hear a washed-up reality show star with a really badly messed-up, botched plastic surgery job? How desperate?
Well, you know, we can't watch the TV anymore because it's all full of all that diversity stuff. We just want to hear about white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus and leave it at that.
Okay. Asa. You guys, gals, are a bunch of squares. I boil my chicken in NyQuil for the refreshing burst of flavor. Fucking bounty hunter, Asa continues. Dog, wow. The Repigs are bringing their big guns out. Who's the next headliner, Steven Seagal? Oh, I know. And Don in West Tennessee adds, another thing regarding NyQuil, in the old days you could catch a buzz on a bottle of NyQuil until they had to change the formulation to make it no fun anymore. Hence the NyQuil blues. Yeah, even when I was young, there were still little old ladies who swore by taking an aspirin and drinking a 6.5-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola every afternoon for their... I guess for the Fantods or something. Granted, cocaine had been out of Coca-Cola since like 1910, but that didn't stop them little old Southern ladies. And I feel so much better now. It just gives me a little kick. Look, it peps me up a little bit.
Huh. Oh, what a fun country we live in. Isn't it just?
Oh, look. I'm so glad Annette's not back here. Because we've got a J.D. Hillbilly story. Yeah. J.D. Hillbilly,
the hillbilly whisperer from Yale, who was most recently seen being completely and utterly, totally humiliated by nitwit Nero. Yeah, he's kissing my ass now. Yeah. Well, J.D. Hillbilly gave an interview last year. You know, he's running for the Senate. He's Ohio's answer. Well, he's the Dr. Oz of Herschel Walker's. And hopefully Tim Ryan will just thump him like a little tin drum. And in an interview last year that has only recently come to light, J.D. Vance can be heard trying to firm up his macho hardline position against, you know, those people. You know, one of the central tenets of fascism is the necessity for an other. So because fascism requires an us against them, mentality. And in this, and the them can be anybody. In this particular case, it's Somali immigrants. And in this speech last year, and bear in mind, Columbus, Ohio, the Buckeye State, has the second largest Somali community in the United States of America. I guess first is the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And so showing up on some radio show called Jack Murphy Live, maybe it's just me, but there's something filthy sounding about that. I don't know who Murphy is, and I don't want to know. Jack Murphy Live. Whose name isn't Jack Murphy. Whose name is actually John Goldman. And he's the founder of a private online men's club. Oh, my. Jack Murphy Live, indeed. Called The Liminal Order. He did that after he lost a job with a Washington, D.C. charter school board. Groomer! So he's what Pat called alt-right. And so J.D. Vance sat down for a chat. Jack Murphy wanted to know, what makes an American? Yeah. What's an American? What's a woman? They're a very confused lot. These maggots, these alt-right fascists. So that was the question that he put to J.D. Vance. J.D. Hillbilly responded to the question by referencing a part of Minneapolis known as Little Mogadishu. You have crazy things happening, like some guy hatchets another person to death in Little Mogadishu. Is it racist to not want that to be part of your community? That not to be part of your city? I don't think it is. I don't think it has anything to do with the color of people's skin. I think it has something to do with I don't want people to get hatcheted to death in a community where I live.
Apparently it's all about the hatchet. Because people get gunned down in places where J.D. Hillbilly lives all the time, and suddenly there's... it goes all quiet. But he was off and running. Shut up, he's on a roll. Anybody who follows the rules for what's required to become an American, who comes here and works hard, who plays by the rules, who feels a sense of duty and obligation to the country, not just like they're owed something, these people are Americans. Obviously, I think sometimes we let in people into the country that don't make great Americans. You know, those people. And so he goes up to some, makes mention of a survey that said 39% of Afghan respondents believed suicide bombing could be justified. That was done 10 years ago. And now the xenophobes are using that to say that, well,
that just means, we can't be letting no Afghans come to live in America, even though we're the ones that destroyed their country even more than it was already destroyed.
On and on and on with these people. Now, Vance said,
there's a difficult question here. Are the people who believe these things, are they going to be successful at becoming American citizens? And is our country actually going to be enriched by them becoming American citizens? And to me, the answer is pretty straightforwardly, no, right? I frankly don't care about the color of the skin of the people who are coming. It's a question of whether they believe it's okay to blow yourself up in a mall if you disagree with somebody.
And then he went off into the hatchet attack. And it turns out it wasn't anything vaguely resembling what they said it was. He said it was. Oh, well, no, it was the story of Abu Qasim Jilani. 20 years ago, 5 Minneapolis police officers blew Abu Qasim Jilani away because he was walking down a street waving a machete and a crowbar. His family members said, he was 28 years old. He hadn't yet mastered English. And he was deeply mentally ill. And it should be noted that he wasn't violent. He hadn't hatcheted anybody. He hadn't killed anybody. He had a crowbar and a machete. But he was so far out of it, he wasn't even acknowledging that other people were near him on the streets. Oh, but he did do one thing that merited killing the shit out of him. He kept muttering, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Which is a prayer that means God is good, which could just as easily have been the desperate plea of a man in the depths of behavioral illness. That the Creator he believed existed would somehow intercede on his behalf and ease his agony. But still, the Minneapolis police, 5 members thereof, pumped him full of lead. Now, he don't like brown people, J.D. doesn't. At a foreign policy conference for the American conservative and American moment, he told one of his Iraq war stories because he had to guard some Iraqi prisoners. And he said that the hardest thing they had to do there as Marines was keep the older Iraqi men from fucking the younger ones. And he said at the time he read a couple of right-wing books, he called it conservative, that wanted a nice, violent American foreign policy. And he also read the complete Chronicles of Narnia. I'm thinking you kind of missed out on the whole metaphor of who Aslan the Lion was there, J.D., but that's me.
I remember having this, very distinct thought that I'm reading this ridiculous fantasy book about dragons and talking lions.
Hey, the lion can talk. Still think you're missing the metaphor. C.S. Lewis was a nut. Never mind.
And witches and so forth, and it was more realistic about human nature than the two neoconservative books. What is the nature of the country that we're trying to transform? What's its history, linguistic, and religious tradition? Who are the people who live here? Do they want the foreign policy gifts that the United States comes to offer?
Yeah, foreign policy gifts. You know, the ones that are delivered as the payload to a Tomahawk cruise missile, I guess. It would be hilarious if it were not so damn tragic. But I guess, you know, if Tim Ryan wins, he'll probably win 51-49 or 52-48 or 50.5-49.5. Because Americans just can't quite decide whether or not they want—I mean, whether or not they want to be a free people—and it's really quite disturbing. And you know what? You can file with that all the paroxysms of dragging the carcass of the queen around in England for a week and following it like a Grateful Dead show. And all the people who, I still can't, Steve, I don't know if you heard me mention this, but you know, I-75 does go right down through Dalton, Georgia, and I passed right by it on I-75, it was to the right of me as I was southbound, big old damn jumbotron, with a photo sequence of the coin. And at the end it said, God save the Queen. God bless you, Queen Elizabeth. Some such fawning drivel as that. Really? But no, there's J.D. Vance trying to work up a little stochastic terrorism against the Somali community in Columbus. A whole bunch of people just trying to mind their own business and live their lives to the best of their abilities. The article I'm looking at references Ismail Muhammad, who, along with his family, ran for their lives out of Somalia in the late 90s. And after a period of time, settled in Columbus. And he is, in fact, a lawyer. And he is one of two Somalis who are candidates for the Ohio House of Representatives. And he's almost certain to win. Ismail Muhammad said, you know, J.D., clearly J.D. Vance did have a political agenda. And he knew about the case in Minneapolis. And he said, to bring up that one example, that's the image that people tend to paint when they just pick one example that's extreme and be like, okay, I don't want to die, I don't want to be stabbed to death. And of course, anybody would agree with that. But then again, I'm guessing the 28-year-old man also did not want to be wasted in a goddamn storm of lead from the muzzles of the police of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And of course, that happened 20 years ago. And 18 years before another Minneapolis cop knelt on the neck of George Floyd for 9.5 minutes and murdered him in cold blood. Oh, and by the way, in case anybody's interested, immigrants to this country actually tend to commit fewer crimes than actual citizens on a per capita basis. I'm not surprised. Their very existence is entirely tenuous. They're not just immigrants. They're immigrants who are black and brown. And that imposes, let us say, stricter scrutiny. Man, haven't we been all over the place? Oh, and speaking of, J.D. Vance being a Marine and everything, and staying in the Buckeye State, there's a maggot by the name of J.R. Majewski who's been running around campaigning for the Ohio House as, of course, a Republican. And he said, well, I'm an Air Force combat veteran. I deployed to Afghanistan after the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Turns out he's one of those stolen valor motherfuckers. The AP profiled J.R. Majewski. No, he did not deploy to Afghanistan. He never got anywhere near Afghanistan. And in fact, he spent a 6-month stint not in combat, but helping to load planes at an Air Force installation in Qatar. But that's just the beginning. He blathers about conspiracy theories, talk of violent action against the U.S. government. But meanwhile, because the truth matters not to them either, the House GOP Campaign Committee describes this Majewski majerk, saying, his squadron was one of the first on the ground in Afghanistan after 9/11. And his supporters rolled out a campaign ad saying that he's an Afghanistan war veteran. And what, August of 2021, when we finally got out of Afghanistan a long time after we never should have gotten there. And by the way, not fat shaming or anything, but this is a puzzle gutted little feller who said, you know,
I would gladly suit up and go back to Afghanistan, maybe as a member of Meal Team 6.
No, I added that part. And as the AP pointed out, he doesn't have most of the medals that are or decorations that are handed out to the ones who served in Afghanistan. And then the AP, oh, this is a burn. Though he once said that he went more than 40 days without a shower during his time in the landlocked country, he does not have an Afghanistan campaign medal, which was issued to those who served 30 consecutive days or 60 non-consecutive days in country. No way of verifying the 40 days without a shower. Unless maybe you were to track down some folks there in Qatar. And, oh, yeah, it had to be 40 days. God bless America. You could smell him coming at 60 feet. I mean, he had that sort of garbage dump heat wave coming off of him. Oh, well, you know what? He'll probably win. I wish he wouldn't, but he probably will. Jesus Christ. So, we are halfway through the program. We are still at 16:45 for fundraising. It would be. I really hope this won't be a goose egg this evening. So, you know, if anybody wants to jump in, it's mighty welcome. Mighty welcome indeed. And in the meantime, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott, how you doing, buddy?
I'm all right.
Don't nobody worry about me.
Yeah, well, I there's an easy, simple enough way to find out about this fellow's exploits in Afghanistan. Have the CIA reposition the big spy satellite in the sky above the place he said he served and look for, a band of buzzard carcasses all over the place. Because if he went, 90 days?
40. Yeah, he could drop a buzzard from 200 feet.
Right off the old shit wagon. Yes, indeed. Well, anyway, how the hell are you? What's the good word?
I don't know. What would be a good word for today?
Thunderbird.
Pineapple. No, kumquat.
Ah, yes. Reminds me very little of the time I made kumquat pie. Pardon me, sigh. Anyway.
Reminds me of the time we were in Afghanistan. I'd lost my corkscrew. We had to live for 40 days on nothing but food and water. See, I worked in the back reference to the 40 days in the Afghanistan.
Yes.
I'm a broadcast professional.
And we're not talking Jesus in the wilderness, yeah. We're talking real stuff, the real deal, my friend. Did you, I know you were on the road and stuff, but did you get a chance to watch any of the game highlights of the Queen's funeral service the other day?
Oh, I did. I saw some of them. And I saw the story last night about the guy who ran up saying, trying to get into the casket because he didn't believe she was dead.
Oh, shit. I missed that one. But you kind of read my mind.
Yeah.
Because as they were entering Winchester Cathedral or wherever the place
was. Winchester Cathedral. Sorry.
Where there was these guys in red jackets looking pretty spiffed up for the occasion. Three on each side and I believe one in the back to step in and case one of them falls out. Because I didn't watch all of the coverage, but somewhere along, you know, one of the color commentators there off to the side said something about it being an oak casket, which was lead lined, weighing either.
Yeah, it's the lead lining part that kind of, well, I don't know.
the thing weighed either a quarter ton or approaching half a ton. Well, these six poor guys, I'm not saying they weren't fed properly, and as spiffed up as they were, that's literally a heavy lift, you know?
But yeah, they were all chosen for being the same height and the same weight.
Yeah.
And strong sons of Turf Island.
Yeah. But as they're coming through the portal of Winchester Cathedral with the checkered floor, which they need to trade that out and get something a little more modern. If that doesn't say 1950s school cafeteria flooring, I don't know what does. That checkerboard pattern.
You can play human chess upon it.
Oh, I see. Little entertainment value for our royal buck or pound. But anyway, so they're just struggling, you know, sweat pouring down their freshly scrubbed faces. And I couldn't help but think back, and I'm not clear whether my memory is correct, whether it was Yasser Arafat's funeral or the Ayatollah Khomeini.
It was you talking about the ones that where they dropped the casket?
Yeah, no, the body wrapped in a shroud.
No, yeah, that was the Ayatollah Khomeini.
They're doing hand over hand, pass it along, getting him closer to the hole, sort of deal. And the poor
it was an impromptu mosh pit.
Exactly. The poor bastard, the turbaned old bearded fuck, goes ass over tea kettle, you know, onto the dusty plain. And they picked him up, brushed him off, and proceeded to take him to the hole.
Pick yourself up, brush yourself off, start all over.
No singing, goddammit.
Goddammit, no singing. We're goose-egging. Damn you see what you do to me. No, but the guy checking to make sure she was dead, the first thing that came into my mind was this.
As mayor of the Munchkin City, in the county of the Land of Oz, I welcome you most regally.
But we've got to verify it regally.
To see
if she is morally, ethically,
spiritually, physically,
positively, absolutely, undeniably, and reliably dead.
As coroner, I must have her. I thoroughly examined her. And she's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead.
Then this is a day of independence for all the Munchkins and their descendants.
If any,
yes, let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch.
You know, it's when, it's when they, it's when the coroner says that, and you know the stories coming out of the creation of that movie, and what a bunch of creepy little pervs the Munchkins were,
yeah.
Or so it is said. When he said he's thoroughly examined her, I just kind of got a creepy little vibe off of that, Scott.
Well, and I'm so glad it's over.
And by the way, I always love the fact that the camera cuts away when they're talking about her, how dead she is. Camera cuts away to Glenda the Good over there, and she's just grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Did you ever notice that?
Who wouldn't? I mean, come on. Now, earlier you mentioned Dog the Bounty Hunter.
See?
If you were Dog the Bounty Hunter and Bert Lahr as the Cowardly Lion separated at birth, I wonder if if the person I'm thinking of, there's a full face picture of that dude, and I put a picture of Bert Lahr as the Cowardly Lion, and I swear you can't tell them apart. They've got that cheeky, jowly.
Yeah, you can do the overlay where, and you know, they're the same person, right?
Anyway, if I were king of the forest, Jesus.
Not prince, not duke.
Not earl. Is it Earl? I don't know. Are you there?
I dubbed the Earl of Cloves.
Yes, Duke of Earl. Duke. We're playing the
Satchmo of Armstrong.
I'm very sorry that the Queen passed on. I'm grateful that she stuck with it for 70 years. But how long is too long?
I love the fact that I forget who it was that said, who said they're convinced that she was trying to outlive Chuck.
Chuck, her son?
Yeah.
Well, he was catching up on her, though.
No, kid, get back in the helicopter.
What, 72, something like that? I don't know. I could only take it in drips and drabs. I'm telling you, it was, and there's probably not a big Anglophile than I am. I almost contemplated moving there once, and I'm glad I didn't. But I did visit back in the early part of 1985. Thoroughly enjoyed it. At that time, a rather civilized place with marginal food but friendly people. You know. But after a while, I just had to watch Green Acres reruns or something because I couldn't deal with it.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you, under just about any circumstance, why wouldn't you choose the Green Acres reruns? Oliver!
Well, yeah, I should have used the name of something that I would never, ever watch.
Yeah, Mr. Douglas?
Tied up and held hostage for weeks on end.
What was the cow's name, Green Acres? What was the cow's name?
Was it Ethel? No.
No, an Ethel.
I don't remember. I remember Arnold the pig.
Right.
Well, somebody can look it up.
Oh, the things I...
That was a fine program.
Oh, yes, it was. I mean, the way they broke the fourth wall...
Oh, yeah.
You know, picking up kind of where George Burns left off.
Well, you know why that was Paul Henning was one of George Burns' writers.
Yes, exactly.
And the Hops Cakes on the griddle with the credits superimposed.
Yes.
Over the hot cakes. And Lisa says to Oliver something about names on the Hops Cakes. I don't know. So, I wasn't able to listen yesterday. And then when
temporary onset of deafness, or I mean.
No, I was looking for the archive, and it wasn't there.
Eleanor. I only had to think of it. Eleanor was the cow.
How can I forget that? I used to have an aunt, Eleanor.
Smoke cigarettes and drink beer and watch wrestling.
No, she was. She was my mom's oldest sister, and she was married to a fellow named Fred, who was the head of a rail workers union of some sort. And we never saw her very much. We rarely saw her because they lived, by the time I was like pretty much grown up, they had moved to somewhere in, I want to say, Hilton Head, South Carolina. You know, where the rich people live or something. And they'd only come up for a visit up to the D.C. area once in a blue moon. But I still stay, hello, you, these teeth, you can't buy them through the mail. You've got to go in and have them fitted by a professional guy in a white smock. But anyway, they would come up and visit, and I still keep in touch with my cousin Jane, who is just a peach of a girl.
Stop this crazy thing!
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so your trip, I said all of that to say this. I didn't listen, was not able to listen yesterday, and have not listened to the replay. I guess you had highlights of your trip. Did you show slides of your...
Oh, absolutely, and we had an online PowerPoint, and And every photograph had circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. Sure.
Who was that comedian who used to, he had one of those little clicker things, noisemaker things, and he would stand there and he would talk about slides from his latest trip to wherever it was. And with each new slide, he would click the thing, you know, and give a riotous, hilarious description of the imaginary slide that people were supposed to see in their minds.
I don't know who that was, but I would love to see a YouTube video of that.
I think there is one, and I think it was Jackie Vernon. And look for Jackie Vernon slideshow or Ed Sullivan. He was on Ed Sullivan all the time, which perturbed Mrs. Sullivan to no end, I must tell you.
Okay.
Anyway. Oh, that's not, but why even bother lifting the bell? If that's all I'm going to get, well, that's all I get.
So why bother lifting the bell? Ingrate.
I've got writers slaving over hot notepads, working up these routines, and this is the things I get. Tinkle, tinkle. It's. I could understand if you were weak and on your sick bed. With a bad case of the vapors or something, but come on.
It's the Fantods. They're chronic with me.
This is showbiz. Anyway, so how was your trip to revisit that?
It was really good. It was really, really good. The meeting was fantastic. The people were wonderful. Shared a lot of great information. Heard, you know, one of the things that came out of this was that if you have only a passing understanding of the South, you would think that it is some sort of monolithic, blood red right wing shitscape. But I met people from organizations that go all the way from Louisiana to West Virginia.
Yeah.
Because this organization grants in all those states, 12 states. And they are, and people are working relentlessly with dedication that would be, amazing in a state where it's easier to work. But in places like Mississippi Stan or Louisiana Stan or Alabama, it's positively inspiring, uplifting. There are people in the South who work every minute of every day to make the place better for everybody, you know, not just the folks living in the McMansions.
Yeah.
And they're working on human rights, they're working on voting rights, they're working on making life better for immigrants, they're working on environmental issues. The whole spectrum, and it's just, well, it makes you, I mean, there's a lot wrong. Oh, God, there's so much wrong with the South, and I can say that as a Southerner. But when you see efforts like this, you know that there's a whole lot right going on, too.
Well, it's
and I learned a really, really cool saying. It stuck with me. I always learned something at one of these meetings. It was the meeting in Selma, several years back, probably 10 years back. Yeah, it was 10 years back. The meeting in Selma where I learned about the school to prison pipeline. And I heard that phrase, and it was a couple of years before it ever showed up in the for-profit media.
Yeah.
And yet we were talking about it, and that's what I mean about us being ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And so I learned. And this is so brilliant. Make it harder for them to do the wrong thing than it is to do the right thing. If you meditate on that for a little bit, pow, it'll blow your mind.
Well, it all comes under the category work worth doing. And there's probably not a sweeter, maybe sweet is not the proper way to describe it, but a more worthwhile and satisfying sweat or perspiration or glow than that which results from people totally engaging in work that's worth doing.
Yeah, and they, and these are people in impacted, affected communities. And I know a little bit about this, Scott, because, you know, when you do this kind of work, at the end of the day, you don't just go, oh, well, days, you know, it's not like you're some coal company executive and you just walk in and you set the briefcase down and you know, crack open a bottle of whatever and put it all out of your mind until you have to be there again tomorrow morning.
No, this is work that is...
This is the work of people for whom it is day in and day out, and it is on top of them.
Well, yeah, because they are at stake if nobody's getting that work accomplished. Their very lives and futures are at stake unless somebody is actually... You know, it's part of the solution, part of the...
Right, it all falls under the general heading of if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Bingo.
And these are people who refuse to be on the menu. And I had beautiful moments every morning and every evening. We did what was called cultural sharing. And for the first time in my authentic form, I got to stand up and read some of my poetry to a group of people. And it was just amazing. And there was a rousing ovation afterward. And just so much kinship. So much fellowship. And I went away from there sad that it wasn't going to go on for three or four more days, because it could have.
A lot of love in the room.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of substantive information, too. Stuff about data and about keeping... And it is a full-time job keeping up with Republican attempts to keep people from voting, people like most of the people in the room. And they had their shit together. And they knew exactly what was going on, and they were damned well prepared to fight it to the bitter end. And if you can be around people like that and not be inspired, well,
yeah. Did you detect a mindset or a vibe that people are motivated differently now or more intensely, and a lot of it goes back to the 4 years of you-know-who, and people, Trump served as a major disturbance in the force for a lot of people, where the scales were taken from their eyes, and they knew in a new dynamic, in even more intense way, just what the deal was, and how much...
Absolutely, and what's more, Scott... There was a visceral understanding that so much of what gets called white nationalism or alt-right, that all of this is just a rebranded Klan. And as such, yeah, there was an understanding that, I mean, there was nobody in that room saying shit like, well, you know, they're all just the same, voting don't really matter, you can't... I don't know. I ain't going to bother. There was not a breath of any of that shit. That was a room full of people who knew that they had to vote like their lives depended on it, because it does, because they do, and that they were going to try to motivate others to understand things as similarly and as viscerally and as thoroughly.
And I don't know what the opposite number is, but you've described a feeling in the room during it and an afterglow after it that is remarkable and inspiring. And I don't... If you take the same number of people who were there, but they're on the other side, what sort of vibe do you think goes around in that time? I mean, other than the obvious smell of sulfur...
It's more like a big hit of ether and strychnine.
Yeah,
that, you know, when you're attending when you're attending meetings where the keynote speakers are Clanny Oakley and Marginal Trailer Queen, it's one of the... If you're sitting there covering it as a journalist, you're just sitting there, I don't know, maybe you're in a betting pool with the other journalists for when they start taking their clothes off and playing with themselves.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's not go there.
It's crazy. It's unhinged. It's people scratching, you know, scratching and grunting and yeah, Joe Biden's opened the southern border. He ain't got a border anymore. And the Mexicans are just taming it. Oh, we're going to be up to our eyeballs in Mexicans, everywhere Mexicans. I mean, I've played too many of these clips, you know, Scott.
Oh, I know. It's a different... I use the universal we for all of the various people on our side. We are a different sort of folk, is what it comes down to. And that therein lies our strength. These people, for decades on end, have been pushing for conformity and sameness in ways that have been harmful and hurtful to the rest of the people in the country and on the planet. And if your motivations and your impetus going in are ugly and flawed, you're going to get ugly and flawed results. I mean, and this group is not that. That's what I'm saying. That's the sense that I get from what you're telling me. Well, I'm glad that it was a worthwhile trip. I applaud everybody who was there, up to and including you. And none of this.
Well, thank you.
None of this two index finger, almost silent applause. I'm going to give you a full palmed.
Oh, thank you. A little golf clap. Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. Did you see that shot? Oh. Marge, it was incredible. Anyway, I had
a note from Ron in Raleigh. He said, the Queen's interment. I know you're not a fan of the royals. While I don't blame them for the family they were born into, I have to say, however, my favorites are Princess Anne and Prince Harry. And there's a lot to be said for Princess Anne. She's, Darlene mentioned last week how heartbroken she sincerely seemed to be. Ron goes on and says, I thought that Anne cut a dashing figure in her uniform following her mother's casket. She was very stoic, but you could see the pain in her eyes. I like Harry because when given the choice, he chose the woman he loved. As far as King Charles is concerned, that man's stick up his ass has a stick up its ass. And I heard some... I was driving home, actually. I was listening to the radio. And I heard some... No, I was watching. It was. Why was I watching? But some
you,
former.
You weren't watching. You were listening with your eyes.
Yeah, some former servant of the coin, talking about her. Yeah, she had such a lovely sense of humor. And you know, and most people don't know it, but King Charles does as well. He has a fantastic sense of humor. He'll come into the room and say, "I'm going to have you all beheaded today." And then he'll say, "No, just joshing," and then the room will erupt in laughter.
Yeah, it's that royal command kind of laughter. I get that from time to time, but yeah, that's great. Well, the stories, you know, are going to come out.
Yeah, it was actually, you know, bless her soul, when she was alive, it was quite lovely. You know, from time to time, she would have someone distract Boris Johnson while she stuck a wooden match in his shoe and gave him a right dandy hot foot.
Yes, and family night was always a treat in one of the palaces. I forget which one. They'd be sitting around the table playing a rousing game of Chinese checkers, and things would not go Her Majesty's way, and she would take one liver-spotted hand and fry her fingers underneath the Chinese checkerboard and flip it. And marbles would be everywhere, raining marbles. And this would wake the corgis up, of course, a dozen of them on the royal couch. And they would scurry and scamper down to gobble up all the marbles.
But, you know, the family was always wonderful with charades until Camilla came in because, you know, it was a delightful game of charades, and Camilla just ruined it. They had to stop doing it after a while because every time someone would stand up to do a charade, well, there would be Camilla, and the first thing out of her mouth would be, "Is it a horse's cock?"
I wonder how the corgis are getting on, because animals know when...
Well, I'm worried about the corgis, because Andrew's the one who's taking care of them.
Oh, well, they'll be in an 8mm peep show film before this is over. I mean,
regular 8 or Super 8?
Bring your quarters, boys and girls. It's me. There's shit to be seen. What was the title?
No, shut up. Stop it for a minute.
All those porn films have catchy titles. Corgi's carnality or something. I don't know. But then the queen would totter off to the cupboard and get a bottle of royal castor oil and a spoon. And she would dose each of the errant little doggies. And as nature happens, it would take its course, and the Chinese checkers would be in a lump. Anyway, people are eating. I better get off of that tear. I can't tell you how wonderful the weather finally is.
Nice.
We're getting to one of my favorite two seasons here in California. Spring is usually lovely, and our version of autumn is usually quite nice, except for the fires. I mean, this is fire season.
Well, the fires do take something out of it.
But it's just spectacular. It was so freaking hot. I think the last time I talked to you, I told you the thing I did with the popsicle. I did a naughty with the popsicle. And it did cool me down, I will tell you that, but only for a moment. But I don't know.
Again with the popsicle.
I love this. It's one of the basic joys of life, popsicles, although...
Okay, so I got to be... All right, we're going to do this. The brand is Outshine, and it's a fruit bar. It's not a true popsicle, it's a fruit bar. But the watermelon ones... Because, you know, usually watermelon tastes fake. It's like some chemical concoction that's supposed to be a simulacrum of watermelon. This stuff is real. And it's like eating frozen watermelon, and it is heavenly.
What's the name of it again?
Outshine. Outshine. Watermelon bars.
Well, I must look for them. Where do you find them, like in convenience stores?
Grocery stores mostly. You know, I find them up at the Wiggling Pig and Wally World and Food Lion and Kroger and what have you.
Now, Robin, I haven't been to a grocery store in I don't know how long. They bring me my vittles. If I went to a grocery store tomorrow, I wouldn't know how to act.
Well, it's pretty much still the same grocery store experience. Oh, but speaking of frozen confections and quiescently frozen treats...
I think my second wife out of this. Take my wife.
You're in,
somebody.
You're in rare form this evening.
Yeah, I got my... I had my Rodney Dangerfield cocktail before I called, so I'm in fine fetter. Is that a word?
Fine fetter?
I thought it was federal.
Okay, we will leave that one up to the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Another one. They had it out at Swiftwater. This is an unpaid product placement. Hershey brand banana pudding pops. I'd never heard tell of or seen the like, and I determined that I must try one.
Are they covered in chocolate?
No, they're banana pudding pops. Banana pudding. Since when is there... Come on, you were raised in Virginia. Since when does since when does banana pudding have chocolate in it? Come on.
Well, Hershey, are we talking about the chocolate company?
Yeah, but they're also an ice cream company.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they are. Really and for true. So it turns out it's... I took it out of the package, and it's got like a... I guess you'd be like ground up vanilla wafer exterior. And then there's a sort of a layer of like what might be deemed banana popsicle material. And then inside it is this rich, creamy vanilla ice cream. Oh, it was fabulous.
And what's the name of these again? Because I'm jotting these down.
Hershey's brand banana pudding ice cream bars.
Wonder if my delivery company has those. I've been on a White Castle's tear. I know that the frozen ones are not nearly as good.
But in a pinch, if you don't have a White Castle, yes.
Oh, yeah, and the nearest one to me is like in Arizona or maybe further east than that. But I'm telling you, I don't know what's gotten into me. I do not know, and I do know that my I can hardly speak because there's some on the way right now. My delivery, for some reason, I'm shopping around trying to think of something different to eat. And I said, I wonder if they sell frozen White Castles. And sure as hell they do. I mean, just about anything you want. You just key it in, and if they don't have it, they'll either find it or send out to the store. I may never leave the house again. I mean, I don't know what I've got to start because I've got to. Are the new shots available? The new boosters?
Paul from Parts Unknown noted that up in Parts Unknown, he's been having a hard time finding them available. But yeah, they're out, and I've seen lots of signs saying, you know. Well, I saw one in Athens, Tennessee. We have boosters available now. This was at an Ingles grocery store, yeah.
Hmm.
Of course, it's the Deep South, so they probably got all they could want and more.
I don't want one of them commie Joe Biden shorts.
I can't find my card. I hope they don't make me bring the card because I can't find my vaccination record card. I know it's here because there's nowhere else for it to be. I'll have to search high. Well, I searched high yesterday. I'll search low tonight, and hopefully.
Well, you know the law of lost things. It'll be in the last place you look.
I had the same problem. I think it was Saint Anthony was the patron saint of lost things. In my Catholic youth, and I couldn't find my St. Anthony medal.
I knew that. I saw that coming from a mile away.
Well, you just know me too well. That's what the problem is. But anyway, I just don't know. I just don't know. Sometimes I think I've got it, and then when push comes to shove, I don't. Anyway, so now what was, I don't want to sidle into Todd's food porn area, but what was the eating like on the road? I'll bet you found new delicacies.
Well, no, they fed us at the conference, and oh boy, did they feed us. We had two absolutely magnificent soul food dinners. The first night was... this delicious spicy fried chicken and greens and mac and cheese and salad and pecan pie for dessert. Whoa.
Oh,
and the second night was, it was Friday, so it was a fish fry. Fried catfish, tartar sauce, fresh French fries. Nobody went hungry.
And I saw on your Facebook a picture of you and Malloy. How is he doing? Is he doing well and prospering?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
I'll worry about Mike sometime.
No, he's doing really well. He told me about a new exercise regimen he has for his walking routine, and I'm intrigued by it. I may try it myself.
He looks good. I mean, that picture. If that's
oh, he looks great. He looks. He looks young. He looks younger now than I did before I transitioned.
Well, it's something about righteous indignation that'll do that to a person.
Yeah.
I mean, I always think of Piss and Vinegar when I think of Malloy, because I've never met him, and I haven't listened to him for quite a long time, but there's just something about him where you think he's going to snap at any moment. He's on the edge of his chair, and you almost expect him to spring up and start swinging, you know? And I like that in a person, if their message is correct, you know? I truly do. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm moving devices around.
I hear you fiddling about.
No, there's no fiddling involved, I can assure you of that.
The time to dust was before the show, Robin, or after. Let's not be doing studio housekeeping in the middle of the program.
No. I'm thoroughly and completely focused.
Okay.
So you being you and being a lapsed and utterly uninterested in recovering Catholic, are you aware that, 'cause this is, there's some pretty interesting data coming out of this. Are you aware that the annual Pew Survey of Religion in America is out? I've gotten to where I look forward to this. It happens about the same time every year, so, you know, you can put it on your calendar.
Is the trend still moving rapidly toward people are catching on to the scam?
It almost seems that way.
Hmm.
NPR had a story earlier today. America's Christian majority is on track to end. Glory.
It works for me.
And that particular story deals with a couple of folks who walked away from the faith they were raised in. America's Christian majority has been shrinking for years, and if recent trends continue, Christians could make up less than half the U.S. population within a few decades. I'd really like to be around for that. And the neat thing is, it's not like they're leaving Christianity and going somewhere else. They're leaving Christianity and they're leaving religion.
I think that's a good trend.
I do too.
Now, do they break down the numbers in terms of public officials? Because those are the ones...
Oh, no, those are going to keep being Christians until voters begin voting otherwise. That's why it's surprising and hopeful that from that previous story, the Buckeye State will have its first two Somali members of the Ohio House of Representatives, and they're almost lead pipe cinches to be elected.
Well, a legislature or a senate, whether state or federal, should be a reflection.
Yeah, it should look like the people who live in the state.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the official number is, the projection is that by 2070, I'd have to live to be 107. Shit.
I won't even tell you how old I'll need to be. Jesus.
By 2070, Christians will only be between 35% and 46% of the U.S. population.
Say it again,
35% to 46% of the U.S. population in 2070. And this isn't because of the grunting right wingers who bark and hoot and scream and screech and shout about great replacement theory. You know, how many times has testicle toasting Tucker Carlson mentioned that? It's in the hundreds. And of course, it's a racist dog whistle about the good white people ain't fucking enough anymore, and
And we're going to be replaced by the BIPOCs.
Oh, fuck off. No, the reason Christianity is going to be down to 35 to 46% is because people are no longer interested in their horse shit. And they became so enamored with the chimerical illusion of political power that they put it before their mission.
Yeah. Well,
if you've got any self-respect, for instance, if you are a woman and you have any self-respect at all, why in God's name do you want to be a part of a religion that says you are a lesser than?
Yeah. Well, I think the way I described it is the dynamic in play. People are catching on to the scam. Because isn't it true that for the most part, I know it was true in England for a long, long time, church attendance, I mean, the demographics of your typical church, it's the graying of the congregation, and sooner or later, those fuckers are going to die off. And if they're not being replaced by younger people, it's like smokers. The tobacco industry couldn't exist with the rate of tobacco related deaths if there weren't young smokers replacing them. Well, right. It's a similar deal, with church attendance. And I know that they are products of their upbringing and environment and influences. And it heartens my glad to see that younger people and just people of any age who are reality-based are saying, no, we're not, this is, if it were something worthwhile and workable and useful, we'd see positive results by now. And I'm not knocking people who feed the hungry folks, but you got to do it more than on Thanksgiving or Christmas. If it's not a 365 24/7 mission, I mean, there's a flaw in it,
Consider the politicization of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They were highly successful in compelling Catholic doctrine to be made the law of the land by the Supreme Court of the United States in terms of the reproductive choice.
Yeah.
Well, now they're all pissed off about a new bill that your governor, Gavin Newsom, has signed into law.
Oh, what'd Gavin do now?
Well, I mean, it doesn't seem like a crazy thing to me.
But it's probably not. This is California.
It's downright maybe sane. He recently signed into law a bill that has been advocated for years. That let me see if I can find a link. You know, for the most part, when someone passes on, you get two choices. You get a choice, two alternatives. Original or extra crispy, exactly.
Soft or chewy.
Yeah, you can dirt nap.
Yeah.
Or you can be set on fire.
Okay.
I really love the Viking funerals. You know, put them in a longboat, push them out into the water, set the boat on fire.
And wave.
And yeah.
Blow a horn and wave.
You know, you don't get that lingering aroma or anything. Indigenous peoples like the indigenous peoples of the Great Plains. And toward the mountain west, we're known to go off into a distant place and build a bier and put the dearly departed atop it and just leave it for the planet to deal with. Can't do that either.
daytime out in the woods.
Holy shit! You know.
Good eatings tonight, boys.
But you know, I used to say in my younger years that I just wanted to be chopped into chum and dumped in the Gulf of Mexico. That's also apparently not legal. You can dump a few billion barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, but you can't dump me. But in California and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, I promise you, is terribly, terribly upset about this. In California, it'll become a thing because it'll take a while to develop the regulations to go with it. But by 2027 in California, human composting will be legal.
Oh, man.
Washington State was the first state that legalized human composting 3 years ago. Colorado and Oregon said yes last year. Vermont legalized it in 2022.
So a lot of right-wingers got a head start on the composting thing. They're sitting up in Congress right now as we speak. I think of Mitch McConnell. He's starting to turn. I mean, right before our very eyes.
Admiral, he just seems to keep getting stronger, don't he?
Take him down off the windowsill, Margaret. There's a problem. He's turning too fast. Anyway, go ahead, Dave.
So, you know, this is just the kind of stuff we talk about. I mean, it's a thing, and I don't necessarily know that I disagree with it. You know, I'm always kind of wanted to be buried in a lead-lined Egyptian sarcophagus, you know, with the crook and the flail and the septum
Trump was
bee.
In there with her?
Huh?
You said the crook with the crook and the
flail.
Trump was in the box with her? Twofer. Twofer Tuesday,
but
it, baby.
And I wanted a pyramid, but I guess it's not going to happen. Oh, well. So in human composting, they put the deceased into a steel container, and they covered up with, like, wood chips and straw and alfalfa, and in about 30 days, the body is entirely gone. Specialists at a human composting funeral home take the compost out of the vessel, and they let it, and this is an interesting word to use, cure. They let it cure between 2 and 6 weeks. And then the family can come along and pick up their compost and, you know, put grandpa in the rose bed.
Yeah, roses or dinner, you know, veggies. I'm okay with that. I mean,
each body produces about 1 cubic yard of compost. Katrina Spade of a company called Recompose told the Sacramento Bee, natural organic reduction is safe and sustainable, allowing our bodies to return to the land after we die. Now, of course, let's be clear, there's still going to be an industry around it, so that means it's going to cost a small freaking fortune.
Yeah.
I heard about it watching Ted Lasso, but, you know, they put you in a dirt ball with a tree in it, and they plant, you know, just like a tree has a root ball, and when you plant a tree, you're just in. And I think it would be really cool to be like a giant redwood for 1,000 years or so, or maybe the root ball of a Joshua tree. You know, those things are ancient as shit.
Under the spreading chestnut tree, that's what I want to be.
The village smithy lies.
And he sure as hell does.
No, I wasn't anywhere near him. I was busy that night. Village smithy lies.
Yeah, I love it. And see, what's not to like about that? Because first of all, there's nothing in the law that says you've got to participate. In other words, your family, when it's your time, they're not held at gunpoint until they decide to do it. There's still going to be the multi-billion dollar standard funeral industry, which is, who was the, there was a, in the early 60s, there was a woman, Jessica somebody, I think her name was, who wrote a book, an expose about the funeral industry. And there's not a more manipulative opportunity taking.
Oh,
Jessica. I can't think of her last name. It's been some years since I've even looked at the book. But The High Cost of Death is, or a title along those lines, what was the title of it? And it was just, and you know, the funeral industry was just up in arms over it back way back then. What I'm sure would they lobby on behalf of it or against it? Because they, whenever you have an established, very lucrative industry, you don't want nobody rocking the boat, you know, unless they can figure a way to get since they got a head start anyway in that field. Maybe they were for it because they said, oh, a new twist on an old thing. Who knows? I need to read up on that because we all need to make plans, you know, for that eventuality. And I have been remiss about, my older brother's been after me for a while because he's arranged for a resting place. My job is to croak off, first of all. That's step one. And step two, which you've got to do way before step one, is to set it up with a, you know, with a disposal professional to fry me up, batter me on both sides, and put me in a can and ship me off to the East Coast so I can be, what is the word, interred.
Well, and see that one of the benefits of the composting is you can't have one of those unfortunate mishaps where, you know, where Donnie blows back in your face in a shift of wind when you try to toss him out of the Folgers coffee can.
Yeah, check.
But the whole reason I brought this up is, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, and you know the Pew survey and everything, I am so disgusted. I am so sick and tired. And I kind of understand Henry II saying, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?"
Yeah.
The California Catholic Conference said, it reduces the human body to simply a disposable commodity. As if human bodies weren't commodities when the church charged you for the privilege of having a mass said over the departed.
Well, there a good number of years have passed since my last exposure to Catholic indoctrination. But when I was coming up in the 60s, I'm pretty sure that the body was secondary in the eyes of the church. It was the spirit and the soul, which were the vital aspects of the package. So after your spirit or soul or whatever, the essence of you is no more getting mail at that address. Who gives a fuck what happens with the body? I mean, within reason. Am I missing something here?
Well, I mean, the church is missing out on a lot of money. And New York is considering a human composting law as well. And the New York Catholic Conference said, human composting fails to protect and preserve basic human dignity and respect. That just gives me the creeps. You want to preserve the, really, when, you know, the church ought not be putting out statements like that, considering the problem they've had with sexually misbehavioral priests.
Well, they must love the.
You know, because remember, you know, where these sickos are concerned, necrophilia means never having to say you're sorry.
No, I'm not going to say anything like that. I was dissuade me quickly, Robin, because I don't want to.
Oh, I went there. It's my fault.
Yeah, well, I, you know.
I'm waiting I'm waiting for my Murder Hornet Award from ASA, even as we speak.
The religious.
But can you know? I mean, they've got a right to speak, sure. But why should you know? Why should a bunch of sexually twisted clerics be talking about their desire to dictate policy for people that don't even believe in their religion?
Well, and then again, don't forget the emphasis that organizations like that for decades and centuries even, they put the emphasis on the people who are not here yet and the people who are gone. Now, the vast middle, which includes the rest of us, the upright and above ground, they couldn't care less about, Robin, in any tangible way. Yeah, they want your asses in the pews every Sunday, and when the plate or the basket comes by, you better kick in. But other than that, you know, who needs them? Who needs these meddlesome human beings who are upright and above ground? But by God, before they get here, and by God again after they're gone, we've got something to say about that. Well, you fuckers, that's just stop it.
Well, that's emotional abuse. At the bottom line, and yes, Brother Deacon Asa confirms, you know it, that table is ready for you right in the depths of the hot place. Murder hornets for everybody.
All round, the murder hornets all round.
But, you know, oh my God, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, so we got to have one of these stories. The Webb County Sheriff's Office of Webb County, Texas, has announced the arrest of 58-year-old Jorge Ariel Benavides. This past September 12th, the charge, aggravated sexual assault of a special needs person. Oh, my God.
Jesus.
Santa Rita neighborhood of South Laredo, back in March.
That's a West Texas town, isn't it?
I don't know. There's too much Texas.
Out in the West Texas town.
Out of El Paso. No, it's El Paso, Scott.
Oh, I thought it was Laredo.
No.
What do I know?
That's the street. You're thinking of the streets of Laredo. As I went out on the streets of Laredo.
Ah, yes. Okay.
As I went out on Laredo one day. Oh, but he's dead. I spied a young cowboy all dressed as white linen, and cold as the clay. Well, the bishops don't want him human composted either.
Yeah.
No, back in March, a woman informed a sheriff's deputy that pastor brother minister Benavides had sexually assaulted her on February 1st.
Jesus.
He picked her up on February 1st at about 9 p.m. local time, and she thought he was going to take her to Las Lomas to show her some paperwork having to do with him adopting her.
The old paperwork clues.
She considered them and him and his late wife to be her spiritual parents, according to Benavides, the rapist. And so once they got to the ranch, on the other hand, Pastor Benavides said, "No, we're going to chill." And then he stood there and took off his clothes and told her to go to the bedroom and remove hers.
I know you can't hear it, but I'm standing here shaking my head.
Yeah, I hear something.
Oh, that's the...
But the thing is, he had told her repeatedly that if she told anybody that he raped her, that he'd have her put in a mental institution with the state. And no one would believe her.
You know, well, that's how they do it.
And he would pull her hair and tell her that he loved her. And then he told her, when she was headed to the truck, he told her, you know, you better pray because you're going to hell for the sin you just committed.
This is after.
Yeah. And so he's been arrested, and hopefully he goes to prison for a long, 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 long time. He tried to harass her into dropping the charges. He owns a foundation called Happy Families LLC, this preacher does.
I'm sure they're happy.
And they said, and they tried to victim blame. And they did perform a rape kit. And even at that late date, they found indications of semen on her body. They found DNA that matched a sample given by Benavides, who, by the way, is pastor at Iglesia Cristiana Casa de Dios. The church no longer exists because they lost their lease at the building they were renting. Ain't God good? Just brings out the Jerry Clower in you, doesn't it? Ain't God good?
Jerry Clower, Jesus. This is the only place on the radio.
Knock him out, John!
It's important to know what's going on, but when you hear a story like that, it just. How old was the lady?
Doesn't give an age, but she was special needs. Is special needs.
Yeah.
And by the way, it being prayer meeting and all, let's ponder moments of gayness in the Bible. I ran across this one the other day because it's actually pretty. It's a pretty little love poem, you know, for Bronze Age stuff. The Song of Solomon.
I figured you were going that way.
Song of Solomon, chapter 2. So is my beloved among the sons. I sat down. Now, this is the Song of Solomon. It's written by Solomon, right?
It's in the Bible.
I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. And this is one of the great romantic... it's beautiful. Stay me with flagons. Comfort me with apples. For I am sick of love. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. I charge you, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that ye stir not up, nor awake my love, till he please. The voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills.
I've seen those mountains. I've seen those hills.
Skipping. Skipping. Solomon wrote that.
Skip to the loo, baby.
Hey, baby, take a walk on the wild side. Say, hey, sugar. Stay me with flagons and comfort me with apples. Wait, on the wild side.
Is a flagon like a plantain or that thing that looks like bananas? What are they called? Is that plantain? I'm sorry. What did I call it?
No, plantain. No.
Honey, slice me a plantain, will you?
Bring me a big plate of flagons.
What is it? No, seriously, I know what apples are. Obviously, they're computers.
It's big. It's a jug. It's got a handle and a spout.
We're back to upper frontals again. Now, all right. Is it like for wine?
There's or mead. Yeah, or beer. Used in a sentence. There was a flagon of beer in his vast fist.
Senator, I must say I like beer.
Flagons and flagons of beer, Senator.
Has he got a flagon with his name on it? Where he keeps his beer.
Well, I think the writer may have a problem because he doesn't just want one flagon. He wants flagons.
I'll drink to that. So anyway, I didn't mean to inhibit your flow, as it were, but is there more?
No. That's just, you know, a guy, it's just tucked away there in Song of Solomon, chapter 2, a guy writing a love poem about his boyfriend.
Well,
And, of course, I guess if you get hold of some... some divine. No. He's writing about his love of his God.
How did that get past the Scissor Brigade? Because you know, when they were cutting and pasting, putting the book together. If you're going to have the international bestseller of all time, available in any motel room in America or the world, thanks to the Gideons, you want for it to have everything that one would want.
Well, he says, you know, my beloved is like a roe or a young hart. These are words for deer. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, shooing himself through the lattice. Hey, kid.
You could catch a splinter doing this, Jeff.
That could get painful.
Hey, dear, I'm going to...
Hold on.
Behind the lattice.
No, I'm going to have to... Wait a minute, I got to... Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, you're back, yeah.
There you are. That's some spicy stuff in the Bible.
My beloved spake and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Well, now.
He spake unto me, let's twist again like we did last summer. I got to find my Bible. I know it's around here somewhere.
And he saith unto me, Chantilly lace and a pretty face, ponytail hanging down, a giggle in the talk and a jiggle in the walk makes the world go round.
That's a liberal lie. We all know the world's flat. Anyway,
I just happened across that the other day, and I was like, actually, I saw that there was a reference to stay me with flagons and comfort me with apples. And I had to look the verse up, and it actually appears in one of the Travis McGee books, which I've been rereading the entire series, and I'm on the final book now. And I was like, oh, where's that? Oh, damn it, where's that? So, you know, thank you, Internet. And I found it's, you know, Song of Solomon 2:5. And I read it, and I was like, wait, because, you know, I'm sensitive to pronouns now.
Yeah.
This is the Song of Solomon. And it's about being in love with a dude?
Well, yeah, because if it's cold... Song of Solomon, that's the A side. I don't know what's on the B side. But you've got to, it implies that Solomon is singing to someone.
Yeah.
Unless he's
a guy.
Pining in the fjords, which means they don't have fjords in the Holy Land.
No, there are no fjords in the Levant. Not at all. Oh, but out of that Pew that Pew survey on religion in America, there was something else that is considerably more, shall we say, upsetting. Oh, and by the way, thank you. I have a huge thank you to send out. Thank you to Rick, who isn't billable up in Washington State. It is now officially not a goose egg this evening. Thank you, Rick. We are down to 1595.
Was it something we said?
I hope.
I wish
not billable Rick could get some company this evening in the remaining moments of the program. But no. Oh, and by the way, Brendan wrote in a little bit ago when we were talking about the composting. Hello, Robin. Hello, Brendan. Republic Bagger Cons, great word, should compost quite well as they're already so full of shit.
There's that.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Will you concur in the cowbell, Scott?
99 and 44 one hundredths full of it. Yes, I concur.
So that's cowbell for Brendan. But no, probably the most striking thing out of this annual Pew survey on religion in America, you know, some things are always the same. You know, the atheists know more about the Bible than the Christians do.
Usually.
Always. Because we actually read it, whereas they only thump it. But out of this particular survey, engaging in hyperbole when I say this is chilling. This is chilling. 60% of the Republicans surveyed, and this is a big survey.
Well, the Pew people don't mess around usually.
Right.
When it comes to
More than 60% of Republicans. And I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. More than 60% of Republicans surveyed want the U.S. to be officially decreed to be a Christian nation. You know, and the Jews can fuck off, and the Muslims can fuck off, and the Hindus can fuck off, and the Sikhs can fuck off.
The atheists can really fuck off.
And the Buddhists can fuck off. And, they would far prefer to just kill the atheists.
More than 60% want the United States to be a, quote, Christian nation.
And that is, you know, that is the effect of the Christian nationalist movement inside the United States of America.
Which, when it comes down to it, I don't think everybody realizes that it has been a thread running through the narrative, sometimes more discernible, sometimes less so, for decades, centuries even. There are people whose mission it is, well, see, back when they put "In God We Trust" on the money, that was a sign of it. When there was Bible teaching and reading in public schools, that was a sign of it. I mean, there have been signposts. It's like the Twilight Zone, the signpost up ahead. Fuck, the signpost has been present in one form or another, with the emphasis changing on the signpost depending on who's being talked to and preached.
Yeah, all the way back to when the turnpikes had actual pikes that turned.
Yes. And there were heads on those pikes, I want you to know. And one
of non-believers.
Yes. One of them was my brother. But yeah, it's, you know, there's no, I've learned one thing. There's no winning for our side or on a permanent basis. It's hopefully a steady and continuing series of interspersed victories. And you've got to look at it that way. The job will never be done. The fight will never be over until you're underneath roses in the backyard in that form. Consider yourself signed up and you may get a request to be active in one way or another. And we rest on our laurels at our own peril, I think.
Oh, I think you're entirely right. You know, it's kind of like something I see when I'm over on in the trans subreddits. I'll see these posts by 19-year-old trans girls, and they'll be asking the same question over, because a lot of them find themselves first in these really, really super toxic areas of like 4chan, where they just sort of get looped into this constant feedback loop of, you know, you can never be happy, you can never be the woman you are. And so eventually they find their way over to one of these trans subreddits, and they'll ask, is it too late for me? And it'll start out, I'm 19, is it too late for me to transition? You know, I've seen, I'm 16, is it too late for me to transition? I've seen, is, you know, I'm 27, is it too late? And the same, and it's the same answer every time. Until you are inside a box and they are shoveling dirt onto it, it is never too late. I mean, if it was too late, I wouldn't have started. I just would have stopped. You know, being me, being alive.
I've never spent any time in the Reddit universe. And maybe there are bright spots betwixt and between the madness.
Oh, there are, but they were... there are bright spots, but oh my God, there's some real sewers too.
A cesspool of madness, from my understanding of it. I mean, what I've read.
I mean, if you like human foibles, there's really nothing more enjoyable than reading the "Am I an Asshole?" "Am I the Asshole?" subreddit.
What is that about?
That's people describing things that they have done and with which people disagreed, and they write the story of it, and they ask, am I the asshole? AITA. And what people get up to and the shitty things they do, holy wow. And so that's a really interesting subreddit. As is the Herman Cain Award. It's still busy.
Well,
the Herman Cain Award is.
It's a never-ending thing. I mean,
it's people, you know, it's a subreddit taking note of people who have been stupid about the virus and have then gotten their Herman Cain Award by shuffling off this mortal coil. And there are usually screenshots of the really ignorant mask hole COVIDiot stuff that they've posted. So, yeah, I mean, but, and I pretty much only frequent, you know, I read Am I the Asshole, and I read the Herman Cain Award. But mostly I just stick to the trans subreddits in there. They can actually, it's actually some of the better people. I mean, nicer people. People are more decent to each other, with a couple of notable exceptions in terms of the subreddits. But, yeah. Republicans want, oh, and by the way, thank you for sending that along, Jude. That is a lovely, lovely rendition. Oh, my God, it's just beautiful.
Hi, Jude.
Jude says, on September 9th, I turned 74. Happy birthday, dear. That day was a heartrending journey when I entered my work. The portrait enclosed was a gift, and are you ready? From a 13-year-old Buddhist girl. And it's just a charming, charming rendition of Jude in all of her beauty. It's just, they captured the loveliness of your soul, Jude. Women's Standing just kicked in, and got us down to 1570. Thank you. Women's Standing, right? The intention is for comfort to Todd, Kevin, and Ken in the death of parents. Kevin and Ken, their mothers passed, along with Todd's father, all in the past few months. do know we never walk alone, especially for the silent horn members and their personal loss. Again, we may never actually know, yet it can be felt. Take care. Thank you. Thank you. Ron in Raleigh writes, subject line Leviticus, you know that do not lay with a man BS. That verse was actually about not laying with a young boy. Some tight-ass scribe edited the verse to suit his own homophobia. Christian nationalism is a racist, anti-Semitic philosophy started by Gerald L.K. Smith. Yes, it is. And it dovetails ever so nicely with...
How far back is Gerald L.K. Smith? That's the 40s, 50s?
30s? Yeah. What? Mid-20th century, I think. But it dovetails nicely with Christian dominionism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wherein they seek to control all aspects of society and make us, you know, Iran with cable. But by the way, because I'm, you remember, what was it, a couple of weeks ago when Precious Lindsay introduced his federal abortion ban. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
And getting
shushed by the rest, a lot of the Republican Party.
Yeah, ixnay on the abortion, a and bay.
Yeah.
We're running from that right now. We're going to tell them the Democrats did it, and a bunch of them will believe us if you'll just shut up. Well, his colleague, the junior senator from South Carolina, Stan, introduced a bill of his own today, and it tracks in parallel with the 15-week abortion ban. Tim Scott basically wants to make it illegal to be trans.
Who I often refer to as Senator Mr. Clean. He's got all the attributes except for the earring.
No. That's Rick Scott of Florida.
Oh, no. Isn't, go ahead.
No. It was always my understanding that, granted, he's a fictional marketing campaign, but Mr. Clean has always been pretty much rendered as white.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, Tim Scott is not.
Oh, I know. This is the 20th century. Everybody gets to play. Especially if you're on...
No, I thought you were thinking more of Rick Skeletor Scott, because he does bear kind of a resemblance, with the exception of the earring.
No, he's more of an emaciated, wild-eyed Mr. Clean. I don't want him anywhere near my greasy kitchen.
Well, anyway, Tim Scott has introduced federal legislation to... and, you know, it tracks that same thing that they were talking about at the Ohio Board of Education last night, you know, where children would be involuntarily outed to the parents who might beat the shit out of them or throw them on the streets, where, you know, the Senate of the United States will now take up the question of who goes potty where, you know, trans girls, you know, it's kind of an omnibus transphobia bill. And again, it comes back around to what I was saying about the people in the room, the conference I attended. Everybody there understood that they were involved in the same struggle. And everybody there understood that they had to vote like their lives depended on it, because it did. And this is another one of those moments, because make no mistake, if they can get their hands on the Senate, this bill will have committee hearings, just like Lindsey Graham's bill will have committee hearings. They will vote it out of committee. There will be a vote on it on the floor of the Senate. And if somebody tries to filibuster it, you can bet your ass the filibuster will be gone in a second.
Well,
if Mitch McConnell wants that.
Hateful and manipulative madness runs rampant in the country. That needs to be written on a post-it note and stuck on everybody's forehead. So when you look in the mirror, you can see it backwards, but you'll figure out what it says, and let that be the word of the day, the word from unity, as it were. We're not out of We are not out of the woods. We're not, we can't even see out of the woods from here. We may never get out of the woods. So it behooves us to, at the very least, stay in charge, because it's the only hope that we've got of forestalling or delaying the worst. And believe me, these people have got the worst on their mind. Yeah, I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the song that people sang was Freedom on My Mind. Well, these motherfuckers have got the worst on their mind, and they've got you on their list. Not you, Robin, but you, whoever hears the sound of my voice. And if you don't believe it, your disbelief, again, is at your own peril. And I posted just today to my Facebook people, there are not a lot of them, but I wanted to remind them to double check, even if they think everything's in order, to double check that their voter registration stuff is in order, and verify it and get double quick sure that they're A-OK, because you don't want that surprise in November. Not this November, not any November. And please, people in the Horn family, make sure all of that's in order, and get friends and relatives.
And go. And go, yeah.
Their mind.
Or, you know, vote by mail if you can.
Make sure they're registered, and make sure they know what the fucking issues are. Because it's existential in a lot of ways. And that seems to be overplaying it, but, I mean, it's not.
Well, to put, you know, just to put a bow on all of this with the Religion in America survey and the moments remaining to us this evening, if you want an idea of the difference between the Democrats and Republicans, again, 61% of this country, of Republicans, want the United States to be formally, officially, and legally declared a Christian nation. On the other hand, less than 20% of Democratic voters feel the same way.
And when they say Christian, they're not, their definition and outline for Christian is not anywhere like what the Republicans are talking about. If anything, they're talking about the good Jesus, the Jesus that fed hungry people, that healed sick people, that showed that.
You know, well, that's the thing. If they lived, you know, if these people who call themselves Christians lived actual Jesus-like lives, there would be no need for any such declaration.
Right.
And I mean, that's fairly simple. As Randy Radar puts it, by their fruits ye shall know them. Hear, hear. Well, we're out of time, Scott. I hope you have a lovely evening.
Well,
we have covered a lot of ground, and I'm glad we did.
Oh, well, I'm glad we did, too. I'm glad that you made it back safe and sound, and that I was able to check in to get rid of those nasty rumors that I shuffled off this mortal coil. I have not shuffled a bit.
There's no shuffling.
No shuffling. I've got a machine. I bought it from Spencer Gifts years ago, and that's how I do my naked lady playing cards for the bridge game every Tuesday. So let that be a lesson to each and every one of you. Robin, it's been fun. It's been real, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Hasn't it just? Scott, have a good night, my friend.
I shall, and you go thou and do likewise.
Go ye unto... Yeah, whatever. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of this prayer meeting Wednesday. The deacons pass the plate, and we're $75 better than we were before. We're at $15.70. That means we'll be at $18.70 tomorrow for Thorn in the Side Thursday. We'll see where it goes tomorrow. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, thank you so much. You're a big part of why this program exists. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. That's Unbillable Rick and Women Standing this evening. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan earlier in the evening in the chat room. Thank you so much, Steve. Our best to little Cletus and Ms. Karen. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Barbara. Barbara just jumped in and took us down to, oh my goodness, 1535, so we'll be at 1835 tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara, so much. And a late note coming in from Lady B. So, talking about J.D. Vance. So he thinks folks from Mogadishu are trying to blow themselves up at the mall in a show of religious fanaticism. Isn't he a sweet summer child? I love that phrase from Game of Thrones. Oh, my sweet summer child. We're more likely to be shot to death by some young, disaffected white male. As far as Tim Ryan, what the fuck is it about appealing to the middle? Are you fucking kidding me? I get it. Some people don't follow politics like we do. They simply aren't interested. But sometimes you got to poke your head up out of the grass. Republicans just decided to leave the federal right to an abortion up to the states. Republicans are dragging their asses on approving more funding to distribute COVID vaccines. Thanks, President. I never miss an opportunity to put my foot in my mouth, Biden. I mean, are there actually people out there who think there's a middle ground between the extremist right wing who support a religious race war and a progressive liberals who think that healthcare fair wages and kids not being gunned down in schools is something that can be worked out between the two? I'm sick of it, Lady B says. Sick and tired of this wishy-washy bullshit. Punish Trump and threaten his crazy followers with severe consequences like job losses and asset seizures. No one challenges the sovereignty and the union of the fucking U.S. of A. and gets away with it. Merrick Garland has dotted so many I's and crossed so many T's, his paperwork looks like fucking Morse code. Get on with it and save this fucking country. P.S. I find it ironic that two black women are the only folks who are producing tangible results in prosecuting the orange clown. Seems like us sisters always got to clean up the messes around this place. It's easy to... Yes. And you're absolutely right. They're the only ones getting any results. Although, Lady B, just to wrap things up, a white lady is doing her best, too. According to a report yesterday in the Daily Beast, E. Jean Carroll, remember her? Nitwit Nero allegedly raped her in, what was it, Bloomingdale's? Goes back to the 1990s. Well, there's a new law out there. It is a sexual violence survivor law. And it whacks the shit out of the statute of limitations for these things. In an August letter to a New York federal judge that was just made public Tuesday, Carroll's lawyer notified the court that severe legal action was on the horizon. The issue was brought up in court filings related to Carroll's current lawsuit against the former president. She sued Trump while he was still at the White House, claiming she was defamed when Trump said the journalist's revelations in her memoir were lies, and adding a piggish line about how she's not my type. As the report noted, Carroll already has a defamation suit against Trump for attacking her character. But this would be the first time Carroll actually sued the former president over the alleged rape itself. The Daily Beast article says Robert A. Kaplan, the journalist's lawyer, explained in her letter to the judge that Carroll is now preparing to file a separate lawsuit under New York's Adult Survivors Act on the earliest possible date, which is November 24th. Happy Thanksgiving, fuckhead. Kaplan also explained that Trump, as he has done in nearly every court case of late, is refusing to turn over court-mandated evidence. He remains unwilling to produce any documents in discovery, not a single document, according to Kaplan. And so she persists in trying to drag him into a room for a deposition and putting him under oath. And given that it's a civil case, anytime he refuses to answer, it can be interpreted in the worst light possible, even as an admission. So women are the ones getting it done. Yeah. Lady B, that's exactly the divide. Religious race war versus health care, fair wages, and kids not being gunned down in schools. You know, they had an entire school board hearing, the entire Ohio State School Board hearing yesterday, where they spent hours on potties. And yet, they seem surprisingly quiet about the fact that kids have active shooter drills and carry, some of them, Kevlar backpacks to school. I remember a time when our kids were young, when we went to get them their school backpacks every year, they had to be clear plastic, so that teachers could see if little Johnny was bringing a gun or a bomb to school. Yeah. So again, thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you. Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. There's some flyover footage coming out of mountaintop removal sites. I'll try to find the link and put it up somewhere, because it remains one of the most shocking things you can see being done to the planet just about anywhere. Please stay safe. Get that booster. Wear that mask. Wash those hands. Use that hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance. Just like Paul from Parts Unknown reminded us this evening. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes babbling towards you saying, this needs to be a Christian nation, this is a Christian nation, well, avoid that white Christian nationalist like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Lighter.